Hello and welcome back to another episode of the DD Geopolitics podcast, live stream, whatever that's called these days. We are live right now on X, YouTube, and Rumble. I also heard that StreamYard can stream to Twitch and Kick, but I don't know if we're too old for Twitch and Kick. I don't know. Maybe one day. Are we too old for Twitch? Are we Twitch quality or Twitch type streamers? I don't know. We are. Maybe not. I don't know. If you're watching this later, obviously, if our producer gets off his butt, it will be on Spotify along with last week's episode. Sorry, Nepal. If you want to help us keep doing what we do, please check out the links in the description or head to ggeopolitics.com. Thank you all for the huge support on Substack and on Twitter. It seems we're breaking out of that shadow ban. And also huge thanks to Jordan and the people at Moonberg who gave us a badge to also help with the engagement and shadow banning issue. So hopefully that helps. But Marat, how are you doing this week? What has been your favorite story, maybe?
I'm just glad we made it to the weekend. Without a civil war, and we'll take it a weekend at a time. But certainly the Trump and Musk story was my favorite. But we'll get to that.
We'll start off because there's a little bit of a hubbub right now. But let's start off with an update on Russia Ukraine. So I think we were live last week during the Ukrainian attack, weren't we? So this week we got some preview of what's to come from Russia. Let's check it out. Earlier this week, that's obviously not up to date as of right now. There are more Russian bombers, more drones in the air. Looks like a very large attack, or maybe Ukrainians are just freaking out for awaiting the inevitable. What we did see in that video is a very, very large explosion in Kiev. The Bolshevik factory was blown up. Obviously, an institution from Soviet times. But I do want to show this news clip from this strike because the Ukrainians obviously complain that Russia's striking civilian areas, but let's take a look.
В том числе украинская пресса сегодня пытается понять, что же такое было уничтожено в Киеве в результате нашего удара накануне. Кадры последствий вызвали очень много вопросов. Взрыва нет, зато много дыма и облака искр. По одной из версий, поражен подземный цех сборки дронов. Дело в том, что это территория бывшего советского завода «Большевик». У таких предприятий всегда было что-то вроде своего подземного бункера. Вот, например, снимки конкретно этого. Обратите внимание на опоры. И вот кадры, как Зеленский недавно привел главу военного комитета НАТО в секретное место сборки ракет и дронов «Пекло». Колонны оказались той же самой формы и на том же самом расстоянии друг от друга. Учитывая, что в таком помещении это важнейшая несущая конструкция, едва ли кто-то будет ее менять с советских времен.
So, Zelensky shows a drone factory, and then it gets shot. Why are we putting drone factories and storage centers in the middle of Kiev?
Well, escalated or, you know, for bait as a decoy?
I don't know. I mean, we go through this kind of every time. It's sort of redundant, but I thought that that was a significant strike.
I was so surprised by the Russian coverage this past week. And just the stark difference, you know, as you know, I do watch the Russian coverage, but just the, I mean, it was like two different worlds, you know, watching the Western coverage of.
What were they saying?
They basically, I mean, it was certainly not alarmist. I mean, they did mention the drone attack, but there was no sort of like superlatives, like a third of the Air Force being destroyed. I mean, they didn't cover any of that. Yeah, I mean, they definitely didn't highlight it as significant of an event as Western media did. The interesting thing, of course, Trump having to both, you know, support, like, show strength on behalf of Ukraine, but at the same time, he has to, you know, the MAGA base itself wants the war to end, right? So he has this contradicting stance where he is trying to please everyone. And once again, you know, MAGA, the confused ideology, which, you know, tries to be everything for everyone. He is in a difficult position now where he has to, you know, please his base as well as stick with Ukraine and stay this course.
Did the Russian media have anything to say about Trump or MAGA or any of that in regards to the SMO?
No, from what I saw, they've taken it fairly easy on him. I think they're just letting him do his thing. As I said, I think in private he is not happy with the strike because this prolongs the war and he wants to wrap this up, right? So every time Ukraine has a show of strength, it's probably frustrating for him because that means the war is going to go on.
Also today, once again, as you guys might have noticed, there were two attempts, I believe, at exchange of the dead bodies, 6,000. I don't know if we discussed on last week's stream, but I know we've discussed it in spaces. There was a deal between Russia and Ukraine to exchange some dead bodies. Russia was offering them 6,000 and, you know, chaos ensued. I think that it was a too, obviously, for multifaceted maneuver by Russia. One, to show Russia acts in good faith and keeps these people's bodies for proper burial. And two, to catch Ukraine with their pants down, basically saying they refuse to take their body. So let's see what happened at the, once again, exchange no-show.
Российская сторона, в соответствии с договоренностями, достигнутыми 2 июня в Стамбуле, со вчерашнего дня приступила к масштабной гуманитарной акции по репатриации более 6 тысяч тел погибших украинских военнослужащих, а также по обмену военнопленными. Обмену подлежат две категории. Это все на все раненые и тяжело больные, а также лица моложе 25 лет. В настоящее время колонна с первой партией подлежащих репатриации тел военнослужащих прибыла в район обмена. В колонне 1212 тел находится. Готовится к отправке в ближайшее время еще три эшелона, в каждом по 1200 тел, и один автомобильный эшелон, в котором также будет 1200 тел. Общая цифра составит более 6 тысяч человек. К сожалению, украинская сторона не подтвердила проведение обмена сегодня и перенесла его на неопределенный срок. Что касается обменов военнопленных, то мы передали украинской стороне список из 640 фамилий. Однако украинская сторона пока воздерживается от назначения даты возвращения этих лиц и передачи нам соответствующего количества военнопленных российских военнослужащих. Подтверждаю, что мы полностью готовы к выполнению тех договоренностей, которые достигли в Стамбуле, и готовы передать и все тела, а также осуществить по установленной формуле обмен военнопленными.
So yesterday, since they refused to take their bodies, they believe twice yesterday, the governor of Zaporozhye started publishing the names of the lists of the names of the missing online. And then a report comes out this morning. Today, Russia once again delivered the remains of the designated to the designated exchange site. Ukraine once again refused to collect them. Beyond the issue of financial compensation to families, another key reason for Kiev's refusal is the sheer number involved. The figure of 6,000 corpses is staggering when compared to Zelensky's last official casualty update in February of 46,000 dead. This single batch alone counts for over 13% of the acknowledged total. Such numbers sharply contradict Kiev's official narrative and will lend further weight to independent reports that and Red Cross data, which indicate that over 400,000 missing person requests have been filed in Ukraine. Not to mention the obvious cost. Under Ukrainian law, families of fallen soldiers receive a one-time payment of 15 million hryvnias, however you say it, hryvnias. but that's close to what our soldiers' families get, which I found kind of curious. Right now the exchange is $362,000. So in normal times, that's would be closer to what we get. We get about 400 or 450,000 to the families of our fallen soldiers. I thought that was not that one is worth more than the other, but I thought that was kind of high for a country like Ukraine, especially since that adding up would be about $2.1 billion just for the 6,000 alone. So I think that's one of the larger reasons why Russia has said you're taking these bodies back. Tried to create this exchange. It catches Ukraine in a huge corner. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it also speaks to kind of the grift of the in the modern day, the way like states and, you know, state military, when those sort of promises they make for families, right? Like there surely has to be some sort of economic model to figure out, okay, if we're going to put out this many soldiers, theoretically, you know, if X number don't come back home, do we have enough, you know, to pay off that tally? And, you know, they already don't have enough at 6,000. You imagine what out of 400,000, what that number would be. There are obviously going to be families not seeing this money, right? And that's the other question is, like, do they ever have to pay? I mean, it's not like they're going to be taken to collections, right? They're a government. So it's really unfortunate. There's going to be a lot of people that don't see any of this money. I am also shocked at that number. It seems like they kind of shot themselves in the foot with a figure so high, and, you know, it constrains them. But yeah, I agree. I think Russia's strategy here, you know, to put additional pressure is to kind of have Ukraine reckon with this total figure of 6,000. I mean, the 46 report is crazy because
it's just, I'm sorry to laugh. I have to laugh.
10%, so yeah, of what the real number is.
It's like 10% of what the like overall accepted total is, which is pretty high. And I mean, I'm not one that, I don't care about numbers. I care about the dead, but I don't care about numbers. I think that's a silly, those are silly arguments to have. But even I would say there's at least a million casualties on the Ukrainian side, easily. Speaking of which, a couple of clips from an interview with Zelensky came out today, to which he thinks Russia's still losing.
Does President Trump believe that Russia is winning this war, do you think?
Yes.
Has he told you that?
I think he's publicly said about it, and I know that he shared this information with some people around him, and I think this operation, and I said it a lot of times, it's not true. It's not a victory when you spend 1 million people.
What?
It's not a victory when you've spent 1 million people from Delulu land, as my daughter likes to say.
That is cope, obviously. I mean, like, because well, how many do we need to get into per capita? It's like, do we need to get into the per capita argument?
It doesn't matter. You've lost a million and 20% of your country. What defines victory to you? Like, I'm not. Oh, there you go. Ukrainians report the takeoff of the, there goes the bombers. So we'll have even more clips for you on Wednesday. Also, here's the other clip that we found interesting.
President Trump told our Terry Moran in an interview, a recent interview, that he does believe Putin wants peace. You think he's wrong? With all due respect to President Trump, Zelensky says, I think it's just his personal opinion. Trust me, we understand the Russians much better, the mentality of the Russians, than the Americans understand the Russians. I know for sure Putin doesn't want to stop the war.
Putin doesn't want to stop the war. This is on the heels of a massive terrorist attack carried out after you planned it for 18 months, allegedly. And Putin doesn't want peace. How much longer can this sort of farce continue with Zelensky?
As long as he's able to do it. In his case, this is actually somewhat rational. It strikes me as rational because no one wants this war to be prolonged more than Zelensky right now, because it's in his interest, right? And so what he's really doing is just gaslighting and projecting. He's projecting his own concern, you know, onto the other side. Russia clearly, because they have the leverage and because they, you know, can have a strong victory right now, they would prefer to wrap this up. I mean, I don't know why Russia would want the war to be prolonged, you know, other than just continuing the wartime economy. But Russia has the leverage right now, and it's not in their interest to sit around and kind of squander that, right? So they'll want to strike, you know, while the iron's hot. And it's Zelensky, of course, that would love for this to prolong, which is, you know, hence operation, the operation they did last week.
Right. He also, in that interview, Zelensky complained that the United States has not made good on its promise to send 20,000 missiles to intercept the drones that Russia continues to target Ukraine with. Maria Zakharova responded an hour or so ago and said, for some reason, he doesn't take the 6,000 aid packages already intended for Ukraine. She's obviously referring to the bodies. And yet he keeps begging for missiles to increase the number of victims. Again, he doesn't take them. So he asks for more missiles, but he won't take his dead bodies. Of course, Maria Zakharova is the one to point that out. Any other thoughts on the... Oh, and of course, there's bombers in the air and drones, and we'll keep you guys up to date on the Russian attack that's inevitable within the next couple hours. Any thoughts about, do you think that this is the retaliation for the terrorist attack, or do you think that this will be, what do you think?
I suppose it's all relative. I do expect Russia to come back with something big. That may not be, you know, today, but certainly each time that something like this happens, you know, Putin feels emboldened, you know, to roll out with the next thing. So I think Russia will continue to try to press on to apply further pressure. I don't know how many more cards Ukraine, you know, has in its hand, but Trump has his work cut out for him if he wants to get the Nobel Peace Prize on this one.
I guess we'll switch gears to the drama unfolding in the United States. You know, when we first started talking about the show, I said, you know, it'll be more international politics focused. I don't really like to get too into American politics. And every week we have at least half a show about America because you can't not report, you can't not discuss it. It's so psychotic. So this week, again, we're going to try to go in chronological order. Bear with us and call us out if we get this incorrect. Oh, I'm sorry. Really quickly, another in good news about Russia. Dnipropetrovsk, they've reached it.
В ходе военной операции перешли границу Днепропетровской области. Всем привет, ребята. Орехово. Орехово позади. Днепропетровская область впереди. Вот флаги возле дороги.
little update from the ground. We never really do those. So just so you guys know, they have moved into the Dnipropetrovsk area. Huge gains on Russia's part, and just in time for summer to really.
Dnipro. So it can be called Dnipropetrovsk again.
Thank God. Dnipropetrovsk. Okay. Now, sorry for that, but I thought that was important because we never really update you guys from the ground, and that's happening as the air campaign begins. So this week in Schizophrenia Land, where we live, and we try every week, we'll try to go in chronological order. Again, please let us know if we're out of order. So the week starts off with, and you know, I was just ecstatic for this headline: Jeffrey Epstein invested with Peter Thiel and his estate is reaping millions. So everything went crazy after that, because this comes obviously on the heels of the huge contract between Palantir and the United States. Epstein invested $40 million in Valor Ventures. And that's another thing with these guys. They have myriad of companies, hundreds some of them have, of these weird shell companies and investment firms and consulting. If ever you're or a consulting firm, that's a front. That's a shell company for something else. Anyway, Valor Ventures, a firm co-founded by Peter Thiel between 2015 and 2016. This investment is now worth about $170 million and was detailed in a confidential financial analysis of Epstein's estate. So this broke on the 4th, and then Elon leaves the White House, which was planned. Let's make sure that that's obviously stretched. He was going to leave. He was exiting Doge on or around June 3rd. He did express frustration with the bureaucratic resistance and the Trump's exclusion of XAI from the UAE AI campus deal. Now, we reported on the UAE campus deal because we covered that trip in very, very, very long detail, but they did receive an AI campus that includes, I believe, Anduril, but it does include Palantir and OpenAI, and X is not included. Now, you guys all know that there's kind of like a power balance or like a very contentious relationship between Sam Altman and Elon, with Peter Thiel, I kind of getting along with both. And kind of mentoring both in a way, I guess. I don't know if I'd call Peter Thiel a mentor. But after Elon leaves the White House on what looks like good terms, he gets a key to the White House, whatever, whatnot, what have you. He goes to a symposium in Montana thrown by the Founders Fund, the venture capital firm founded by Peter Thiel, where he has conversations with Thiel. And special note to the viewers, people note, no coming feud with the president. No coming feud. Who else did he talk to at the symposium? Sam Altman. They say they didn't speak, but they were both there. So hangs out with Peter Thiel, talks to Peter Thiel, and at least hangs out with Sam Altman. Really, really interesting. This meeting was prompted by the OpenAI UAE deal, obviously. And Musk seeks Thiel's advice, blah, 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 whatever. Weirdo tech bro thing. So they meet in Montana. Now, June 5th is when it all begins. And I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, it begins with this tweet: I'm sorry, but I just can't stand it anymore. This massive, outrageous, pork-filled congressional spending bill is a disgusting abomination. Shame on those who voted for it. You know you did wrong. You know it. So, I mean, it's just a bill. I think that Elon, I don't know a lot about the bill, so I'm not here to say Elon's right or wrong, but I think Elon's well within his lane to kind of complain and point out things wrong with the bill. What do you think about the bill and Elon's reaction to it?
Yeah, I mean, the analysis I saw was that he, you know, within his role as CEO of Tesla, SpaceX, et cetera, that within that role, he was, you know, it was basically a good call on his part, or it was within his interest. Now, whether he decided to do all this on his own, or whether, you know, he's in cahoots with someone, you know, by someone, you know, I'm referring to, you know, this wider network. You know, we all speculated plenty of this past week on that, but I think that first off, everyone saw this coming, right? Like these are two egos that we didn't think was going to be a marriage that lasted for too long. And the
president.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No worries. The bill is, you know, it comes down to to the EV and to the deficit. You know, the deficit's a big one that he was mentioning. It's it's curious to me that, like, you know, the timing that it all happened, and, you know, of course you saw the black eye and stuff. But you know, the bigger thing here is the division between the populist wing and the technocratic wing of the party.
So I agree. I mean, I agree. There's something else there, though. This isn't just, that's why I brought up the meeting with Peter Thiel. And my crazy ass on the space, I think I said, when the fight was happening, I said, what if Thiel said, go crazy, get the media off of this Palantir Epstein thing? And I'm kind of thinking I don't know if I'm right, but I don't know that Peter Thiel would say go crazy online, but something happened at that discussion that led this argument to go on as far as it did. So anyway, while all this happens, the House Democrats, I believe two of them, sent a letter to Pam Bondi, which laughable, and FBI Kash Patel, also laughable, on the same day. This was on June 5th. Urging a faster release of the Epstein files. So all this like stuff is building. There's kind of like this pressure on Pam and Kash Patel. Elon's going crazy. And then Trump finally responds and says, just this. I don't mind Elon turning against me, but he should have done so months ago. This is one of the greatest bills ever presented to Congress. It's a record cut in expenses, blobity, blobity. Law, make America great again. We know that it doesn't do any of those things, but it's still a mild response from Trump nonetheless. Then everything obviously goes haywire. But what did you think about Trump's response right there? It's almost like the emperor has no clothes. He admitted he didn't read the bill. He doesn't know what's in it. So what are we doing here? Do you really think that Elon's upset that the bill puts too much money on the debt? I don't think Elon really cares. Or maybe do you think that it's because it sort of says like, F your stupid little Doge venture?
That's a big one. The EV mandate, I would need to look into like specifically how much that would affect the bottom line. It seems to me like Elon's hurt his own company's value just with his own antics. More so than, you know, whatever would have happened here. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but like, they both, you know, have stood to lose money from the bad PR, both Trump and Elon, especially Elon. So I'm remiss to feel like it's all too planned. I mean, you know, he could have been nudged in that direction, but I do think a lot of this is just impulses and poor decision-making reactions, you know, possibly under the use of drugs, you know, in reaction to some difficult conversations.
Elon goes further and says, without me, Trump would have lost the election. Dems would control the House and the Republicans would be 51-49 in the Senate. Such ingratitude. And then Ann Miles Chong, in all of his glory, tweets, president versus Elon, who wins? My money's on Elon. Trump should be impeached and J.D. Vance should replace him. Elon says, yes. And then comes the nuke. Time to drop the really big bomb. It, blah, blah, blah. Epstein files. Have a nice day. Yada, yada, yada.
The magic word, Epstein.
Right. So it's like,
it's incredible. Yeah.
It's like, but we already know that. So like, it was like, that's why I was like, this feels very planned and there's somebody curating this, because that's not something that we didn't know. Trump's known to be on the Epstein flight logs. He's on there 7 times.
Not that we didn't. There's a large segment of the population that, whether they know or don't know, they're like, they very much can't accept that, or, you know, would not want to know that, or, and argue against it. So this, it is still a big bomb, you know, to have that come from Elon. So that was a bit amusing to watch everyone kind of scurry in different directions and disavow each other and pick their sides. But yeah, I mean, anyway, go on. I didn't have anything else.
It's okay. So that bomb drops. Whatnots and what have yous. On June 6th, X and Poly Market announced that they're partnering. Now, X and Poly Market. Poly Market is co-founded by Peter Thiel. So Poly Market, as you guys know, is a predicting platform. You basically bet on the outcomes of everything, from wars to sports games. It's everything. It can even be like, will Kim and Kanye break up this weekend? It's everything. So it's interesting that X is partnering up with a prediction platform ran by it's ran with Palantir money. It's not ran by Peter Thiel. They have obviously a separate CEO. But it's pretty interesting. So they're going to use X. Us, Grok, and are all going to be talking to Poly Market. And remember what we've been talking about this week is that Palantir wants to get to the point where they can predict your future behaviors by observing patterns.
Right. And it's almost dizzying to try to predict the way different, I don't know, conflicts of interest will arise issues of antitrust when you have, you know, companies that will be collaborating with certain AI and they may be, you know, in competition with each other. So there'll be a conflict of interest there, but they would both be feeding the same information to an AI that, you know, that's collecting the data from both. I mean, I can't even begin to understand how, you know, they're going to deal with the issues of conflicts of interest there, but who knows? We're just kind of making this stuff up as we go along and writing the legislation for it too.
Right. And then this is also entertaining because they all start having to go into damage control mode from the Epstein Peter Thiel thing. So they all got to go into damage control mode. So why they're in damage control mode for the Epstein investment into Peter Thiel and that government contract. I'm talking about Cash Patel, Pam Bondi and the like. Elon's dropping nukes on the timeline. So Cash goes on Rogan, which this is so bad. Just we'll watch it.
Again, we're going to give you everything we can. And people have to remember, we're not going to re-victimize women. We're not going to put that shit back out there. It's not happening because then he wins. Not doing it. You want to hate me for it? Fine. Again, logical play out. If there was a video of some guy or gal committing felonies on an island and I'm in charge, don't you think you'd see it?
If you have access to it.
If I have it, period. Right. If I have it.
So
where else would it be?
Right. If you have it.
Right.
But you can't say that you have it.
No, we're giving you everything we have.
So far.
Everything we have so far is.
Have you guys gone over all the video that's available?
Yeah. That's what I'm telling you. That's what takes so much damn time.
Right.
And
is there video from the island?
Not of what you want. The people out there have filled the void with can't wait to see X, Y, or Z.
Right. Speculation.
And I'm like, here's the other thing I've been asking for, right? Openly. If you have information on this, call us. Tell us. The best resource we have is the American people in the world.
The funniest thing is, like, it's so unprofessional because, he's someone in government. So you're used to seeing, like, not seeing them give an interview and then, like, a puff of smoke be flying. Like,
I mean, I don't even really mind that part. I'm going to be too much of a stickler for that. But it's like, you're not good at lying.
And the whole argument is basically him saying, trust me, bro. Like, he's just, that's all he has. He's just like, do you think if I'd have it, I wouldn't release it? it's not an argument. He's saying nothing, but
fantastic. I think we get to see in real time the two of them react to Elon's tweets.
Time to drop the really big bomb. Donald Trump is in the Epstein files. That's the real reason they have not been made public. Have a nice day. Jesus Christ.
I'm not participating in any of that conversation. What is Elon?
Have a nice day, DJD. So much day gets flown away.
They're going back and forth about different things. And
yeah.
Listen, well, he said he was disappointed in Elon.
Yeah, he told him to leave.
Jesus Christ, that's a crazy thing to say. How does he know? Does he know that Donald Trump is in the Epstein files? I mean, does he have access to the Epstein files?
I don't know how he would, but I'm just staying out of the Trump-Elon thing. That's way outside
my
lane.
What the are they doing?
I know my lane, and that ain't it.
I just don't. I mean, I understand he owns Twitter. I think it's bad for your mental.
It ain't my lane. You're the director of the FB friggin' I. What would your lane be?
I like. It says everything. I mean, they clearly people don't know where to fall or where to stand. That's why they're just like, I don't know. I'm just staying out of it. Yeah, that's between them.
Right, because one is attached to the money and the other one is their boss. So it's very, very interesting. I mean, the fallout was fantastic. Alex Jones, I was worried about him for a little bit. Like, he was just like the gaslighting. I was like, he's waking up. Like, Alex Jones, I felt bad for the guy for a little bit, but my MAGA God.
Team MAGA as a whole was coping the whole day.
It's just, I mean, we know, the thing is that we know that he's in the Epstein files. Like, Elon picked a very soft, okay. Like, that's not why they're not being released. Like, let's be honest.
This is like, Elon, I feel like, did something that Trump will never forgive. I think he crossed the line that was, Trump survived many scandals and stuff, but in terms of their interpersonal relationship, I feel like he went there to a place that I don't think they can be cool again after that. So
I agree. And here was my theory. Trump is in a bind. Okay. Because he has a few options, which is obviously to either forgive him or to not. So if you forgive him, that's wild in and of itself. That is almost an admission of guilt. If you don't, what should be done in a typical Trump fashion is he would sue Elon for defamation, which has not even been whispered about. So, and he, the way he took it very quietly, which is not like Trump, right? We know how Trump fights online, even with his allies. We've watched him do it. He says he's basically takes the father son sort of. He's very badly addicted to drugs. Very bad. I'm concerned type of thing. So I guess maybe he's just going to write it off as like, this was a drug fueled sort of rant.
As we know, Trump is not the most forgiving as it comes to substance abuse. You know, he is a teetotaler because because of his brother's issues. But yeah, I mean, I personally don't see any scenario where Trump is able to put it behind them.
I don't think so either. I think that, and that if he does, that's almost an admission of guilt, because looking at pattern recognition, that's totally out of character for Trump. And I just don't even see him having feelings for anybody strong enough that would lead him to forgive them authentically for that.
I think it's get back. So I think Trump, Trump's always like one of those guys who will, neither forgive nor forget, and he'll always try to get even. So I think Trump will try to have something done to Elon, that at least by Trump's perception, hurts him reputationally in the same way.
So then, like, this isn't normal at all either. J.D. Vance goes on Theo Von. Like, what? They can't even go on regular media because they've demonized it so badly and they're scared of what they're going to ask. So they'll only go on these sort of like milquetoasty, very Trump and MAGA aligned podcasts.
I mean, this guy looks like Joe Dirt. and he's, you know, having these important, you know, conversations. Sorry, go ahead.
That's why they chose him. Right? Because now they've got to get people ever complaining that J.D. Vance is very unrelatable. He's very like rigid, boring. They don't really like him. No charisma. Can't relate to him. Don't get it. So they put him on the sort of hunky dory podcast. I mean, that was very strategic, is to get bring him back down to this level of relatability and regular sort of Joe. Cash Patel went on Joe Rogan. Because yeah. Joe Rogan won't push back. Theo Von actually pushed back a little bit, especially when it came to Gaza and stuff. We don't have a clip of it, but it's really not important. He can't even Theo Von's coming off his revelation that Gaza's a genocide. Like, thank you for 2 years later. But he's finally coming off of his revelation. And so J.D. Vance tries to answer that question without answering it and instead talks about Russia-Ukraine. Either way, ridiculous podcast, but I do want to show this clip of Tim Dillon, who reacts to the whole thing.
If you have not one reservation about what's going on over there, I'm not saying you have to feel one way or another way, but if you don't have any reservation, if you have no reservations about what's happening with all these kids getting killed, I can't trust you. If you don't have any reservations about Palantir taking everyone's information, I don't know. I don't know if I can trust you. I think they're buying people left and right. This is my guess. They try to buy me. My pussy costs a lot of money. I get invited to these dinners. I don't go. I've been invited to Teal's house multiple times for dinner. I don't go. It's no shade at them or whatever, you know? The reason I don't go is I remember one dinner, they're like, we'd like to discuss the media. I go, what? No, thanks. We'd like to discuss a dinner. We'd discuss the media and culture. No, thanks. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. That's fine. Don't need a. Here's what I'm doing every week. I'm discussing the media. Hey, good news. I have a show. I have a show. You can listen to it. You can listen to it if you're curious about, but I've been to some of these places. I've sat in these houses in Austin with these tech people and I know what they want. And I know what they want me to go out and cheerlead for and say, well, it's actually a great idea. And there's probably a lot of money in it. There's probably a lot of money. And I just can't do it. It's not because I'm some great moral I wouldn't be good at it. I'd be terrible at coming on here going, well, the good thing about the list. Well, no, if you actually think about the list this way, all my people that listen every week, go, what the fuck happened to him? So my prediction, and I don't want to name names because I don't know. But my prediction is you're going to see a lot of people over the next 6 months start thinking this list's a great idea. They're going to start telling you how great this is and how it's about terrorism. That's the way that'll start going. Well, it's a terror. Have you heard? Is terrorism going to. This is going to happen.
So I know Tim's a little bit much, but I put him in there because he's obviously a very niche podcaster. He has a large audience. He's almost at 1 million on X. He has a huge following and he's being approached by the Palantir and he's saying, oh, I've been to these meetings in Austin and immediately following an Epstein Palantir article, all the podcasters kind of activate to do damage control. So it's just... Yeah.
I assume he was approached in the capacity as a podcaster so that he would be doing the influencer work on their behalf. But yeah, I mean, I wish they would tell these stories in a way that's a little bit less unhinged. Like,
yeah,
sounds like he's on drugs there. But the you know, the idea is that they would be having outreach to these influencers to get them on board, and it certainly makes sense. How comfortable they feel to speak on, like, I assume he's the only one thus far that, you know, kind of has told the story about Teal inviting him over. I don't know. Is he brave because he's on drugs? Is he just talking out of his ass? We can't know that for sure yet. But yeah, I mean, the fact that those sorts of conversations take place, he's probably embellishing a little bit how much he's privy to at these conversations. They're probably just telling him, you know, the talking points are not really bringing him in on some sort of tech meeting, of course. But yeah, I mean, other than kind of hyping himself up a little bit, I think that that certainly sounds plausible.
Well, we know that they do approach people. I'm like kind of getting into this like whole rabbit hole. Like, people are paying each other to appear on other people's podcasts. It's a very interesting network. So I'm not shocked, especially since a lot of these podcasters are in the South. Marat and I have the privilege of being in the Pacific Northwest and away from a lot of this crap. Most of them are in Texas and in Florida. And then there's some leftover still in Cali. But they're all down there having meetings and exchanging money and doing meme coins and all of this. And then as you get up into the higher echelons, obviously it's not so much meme coins, but it's these sort of bigger tech bros with these startups and these trading platforms and whatnots and what have yous. What we will, I do have a clip now of Theo Bond and Peter Thiel. Might as well be. It's just a skin suit for him. JD Vance. So let's see. This is, I think, the Gaza question.
I think the tough thing just as a regular person, right? It's like we're seeing all these videos of people like picking up pieces of their children, and like,
of course,
it's the sickest thing I think it's ever been televised. Basically, if you consider watching something on your phone,
it's very
televised.
Sad, man.
It feels like a massacre, and it feels like, you know, I've called it a genocide. Other people have different thoughts about it, and that's fine, right? And I don't need anybody to share the same thoughts or you two. But I think where it gets scary is that we give, you know, we're complicit in it because we help fund like military stuff, you know, and that's where as like a regular guy, you're like, well, I'm paying these taxes and they're going towards this, like, but you can't do anything, you know, like you can talk, you know, but it's like, you can't, I don't understand how it becomes like tough for people. Like sometimes it feels like we look out for the interests of Israel before we look out for the interests of America.
So let me say a couple things. So number one, like, I think you're a great dude. So we don't always have to agree on everything. Do I think it's a genocide? No. And here's the reason why I don't think it's a genocide, because I don't think that the Israelis are purposely trying to go in and murder every Palestinian. I don't think that's what they're doing. I think they got hit hard, and I think they're trying to, like, you know, sort of destroy this terrorist organization, and war is hell. And that is true. I also think it's true, man. I mean, I've seen people on my side of the political aisle. I'm a Republican. You know that, but your audience may not. Who, like, will see these videos of these innocent Palestinian kids and say, oh, well, they had it coming to them. No. Like, if you have a soul, your heart should break when you see a little kid who's suffering, which is why we have the policy that we have, which is we're trying to eliminate the conflict, eliminate the source of the conflict, so that we can actually bring some peace and some humanitarian assistance into people. And what happened with the Biden administration, man, it's crazy. They were spending so much money all over the world. They weren't engaged in diplomacy at all. So they'd sent, I mean, we sent $300 billion to Ukraine, for example. And you never had the president of the United States actually trying to force a diplomatic settlement. I mean, you talk about bodies all over the ground. Dude, the Russia-Ukraine thing is the most vicious. We see satellite images. We see classified images, man. Yeah, it is vicious. And again, it's I will hear people who will say, well, you know, they're, again, mostly on our side, we'll say, oh, these, you know, the Russians got killed. That's a good thing. Look, I'm not defending the invasion. I'm not defending starting a war. But when human beings are getting blown to bits, your heart should feel sad about that. Yeah. And you should try to do something to fix it.
This is like gobbledygook. I don't even really have a response to it. It's like,
well, the funny thing was he begins with, well, I don't think it's a genocide. Let me explain why.
Because, right,
they don't want to literally come and murder every single one of them. So, I mean, at that point, you're just like, I don't even think know, the Nazis wanted to genocide them. I mean, just like nobody would fit that criteria, right? But
for them to talk about Ukraine, Russia, because they don't have any control of Ukraine, Russia. So they can say, we're really, really trying. Our hearts are really in it, but they have all of the control over Israel, Gaza. So they got to get off that topic.
And also just pretending like they're running some sort of different foreign policy from the Biden administration and, acting like, they're doing, Biden was doing this and acting like they fixed or, rerouted something. Everything is still kind of just ongoing. But yeah, I mean, this is that administration. I'll just say anything. Also the eyeliner. I mean, it looks like Fallout Boy. Did you see his eyes?
Sugar, we're going down swinging.
Eyes were popping.
There's more of a Panic at the Disco kind of girl, if you will. A little bit more depressed than Fallout Boy was providing. But I also want you guys to take notice of Theo Von. You know, these bigger podcasters only ask what they're allowed to ask. And how he asks it, like the sort of like, I kind of feel like the Gaza things is not good. It's a genocide, Very like nonchalant. I'm a regular guy. I don't really like my tax dollars going to this. It's a very, you're muted, but, or you're not coming through. But it's this sort of wishy-washy, already getting him kind of out of the answer before you even finish the question. This sort of like, we're regular guys.
It's kind of vegan, bro. Like, the Gaza situation, it's just like, not chill, man. Like, what do you think about it? Yeah, it was like, whatever, man.
It's like ridiculous. And then it's like, man, the bodies in Russia, Ukraine. Okay, let's be fair. We've been watching this war since it began. There's probably nothing that he's seen that we haven't seen or haven't seen something similar to it. I mean, we've seen some of the most harrowing scenes out of Russia, Ukraine, and nothing than that war prepared me to watch what went on in Gaza. So this weird segue of this, like, there's so many soldiers' bodies. And I'm sorry, maybe I'm wrong for this, but I think that humans naturally and should not feel less pity, but feel differently about soldiers laying in a field as a casualty of war than as children being shredded and put into buckets by their parents. It's a very strange comparison that he tries to make, like, draw people into. It's not the same. It's very weird. And to even liken Russia's than Ukrainians laying in a field to the children in Gaza is just
strange. It's very morbid. It's where we're at now, because there's so many wars and you're just using them as metaphors for each other or comparisons. And yeah, it's bleak.
So also today, I saw this morning, this is why we started the show a little bit later, guys. And tell me if you hate the time slot, but we started it later because Sunday usually has a lot of news and Russia usually strikes on Sunday nights and things usually kind of happen. So we were really rushed in the morning to get this show as current as possible. So that's why we're later. But today, this really good article came out. And if you guys have a chance to read it, called Once Champions of Fringe Causes, Now in a Trap of Their Own Making. And it's very, very true. And we've discussed this a few times. It says, this is from Russell Muirhead. He's a professor at Dartmouth. Patel, Bongino, and the other leaders are caught in a trap of their own making. The world they helped create, a world in which conspiracy destroys facts, is now the war they have to inhabit. And I thought that was really interesting. And obviously the article lists off a ton of things. Again, if you have time, read it. But what some of the things that it says is the campaign promises, right? And we'll also get into this a little bit more, but Trump said millions of immigrants were flooding in, right? That was a bit of a conspiracy theory, but once you say that and use that as your sort of soapbox, you're then tethered to that cause to then alleviate it or to at least show that you're fixing it. And those things aren't sort of happening. I mentioned earlier they've discredited the media so thoroughly that now they can only appear on friendly podcasts that will really give them no pushback, and that's because they've kind of built their own trap. Bongino, obviously a podcaster leading up to this, made all kinds of they should be doing this about this and they should be doing this about that. Well, now they put him in the seat to do those things, and he's promised to investigate who brought cocaine into the White House. Why do we care? I don't know. The scandal during the Biden administration. He also wants to investigate the leak of this draft of the Supreme Court opinion, which overturned abortion rights. He wants to investigate that leak that happened in 2022, just for clarity, and the discovery of pipe bombs near the Rush Republican and Democratic Party headquarters before January 6th. They were also talking about investigating or like doing something to help the people who were something about January 6ers. All of these crazy conspiracy promises, and now they're all kind of tethered to these promises. And just to juxtapose the two, we do have this video, and I believe it was Ryan Mata on Twitter that put this together.
Again, logical play out. If there was a video of some guy or gal committing felonies on an island and I'm in charge, don't you think you'd see it?
Tens of thousands of videos of Epstein with children or child porn. And there are hundreds of victims, and no one victim will ever get released. It's just the volume, and that's what they're going through right now. The FBI is diligently going.
They can't even get their story straight. I think that was Pam Bondi in March or February when they were supposed to get the Epstein files to them on day one. They did the whole charade. And I want to tell you, I called it. I'll repost it after the stream. But I called it that the Epstein binder and all this bullcrap with all these paid actors and these podcasters and the binder show and the blah-bitty, blah-bitty, blah, all these stupid charades and stories, they're never going to amount to anything.
All of these guys are, just rascals, like, you know, scrapped up off the street. I mean, they're like me, kind of winging the show, like, you know, 30 minutes before the show. It's like these guys are just amateur hour. This is what you're gonna see. I mean, Kash Patel is sounding like there's a skit in Portlandia when they're signing up for the cell phone service, and it's the Indian guy signing them up. He's BSing them, and he's like, "Oh, it's a one-time annual fee," and he was like, "Well, you pay it one time annually." Is what he's just like BSing them and just like talking in that that way, you know, as when they're talking in circles. So he just sounds like one of those cell phone kiosk salesmen trying to scam you.
I don't really know where we're at with like all of the Palantir Epstein tapes. It all ties in together. But it's been an incredibly wild ride. And I'm sure it'll continue to unfold. But of course, we've got our new distraction, which is California Love or whatever's going on over in California. So we have ICE riots, really interesting developing situation. Russian channels are going crazy. Guys, don't get upset over the memes. This has already shown up. The People's Republic of California. Congratulations. And you want to know what? I'm going to use this as a teachable moment because people got really mad over that flag. Like Americans got incredibly mad. And I want you, if you did get mad or you felt any sort of way about it, you should know that this is how the United States reports their protests in their countries. Anytime there's a little civil unrest in Georgia, it's all of a sudden these separatists or these people, these democratic freedom fighters that are trying to get out from under the regime. Like that's exactly how they report it. So I'm glad that you got mad, but please know that's how we cover things in other countries.
100%. I hope they're more mad for the Cascadia flag.
I love the Cascadia flag. I actually have the Cascadia flag. Yeah. Lovely, lovely flag. But yeah, so we have these sort of protests. This is from today. The National Guard arrived. Seeing looks like a bunch of millennial or Gen Xers and boomers. Like, what's the big deal?
there's certainly an interest in hyping up an idea that there's, you know, emotion, there's people rioting, there's violence. We need to send in some more troops there. We need to get things in order. You know where this is going, Sarah. There's you know, a narrative they're chasing, and so they're going to keep pushing that.
Well, I want people to know, especially our international viewers, that California does not, especially Los Angeles, does not F around when it comes to protests or riots. And this one has a Mexican cause behind it. If this could spiral out of control quickly. Aria's telling me that Ian Miles Chung just posted that cop cars are on fire. But I mean, that's not really. Listen, guys, there's really nothing to get excited over in Los Angeles. This is like a regular weekend for a little. Like, it's not like this. A cop car burning. Okay.
Why is Ian Miles Chung report? Why do we keep letting him do this? Where are the LA people posting the video?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's what I guess Aria follows him closely to get all of the breaking news while we're on stream. While we're not posting, Aria is following Ian Miles Chung very closely. But like, I mean, I just don't feel like this is anything to get that excited over yet. Do you? I mean, they're talking about sending in like massive amounts, like deputizing people and like sending in the Marines and like, yeah. And I want, do you even have an opinion on this? I don't. I'm for deportations. I don't think illegal immigrants should be here, but I don't dictate to people how they should protest. I just don't. Like, I don't do that because that's always, you'd hate that when it's your time to protest. I don't like it. But I'm not going to.
Blog. I think this is they're manufacturing the consent further. They're you know, building a narrative because they you know, they expect to deport a lot more, or even they've been expected to. But I think they need to. There's some sort of ramp up they're expecting, and in order to do that, they do need a narrative that there's you know, some unruly riots going on. And also, like, I'm also, you know, I do support you know, taking care of the illegal aliens issue. And I know a lot of people support that across the country. LA is a place where, you know, even if you support that kind of in an abstract sense, there are so many, you know, it's near the border, of course, there's so many undocumented people there that's a place where the real life effects of these policies are going to be seen. And so you're going to see people that are frustrated because this is people that they know personally. This is no longer just, you know, kind of something you're speaking in general, it's people they work with, people they live next to that they're going to be seeing.
Exactly. And I think that's important, especially for our international viewers. Like, America is not a monolith. And especially when it comes to our issues and how they affect each area is not alike. California has a deep, rich history of Mexicans and South and Latin and South Americans, whether they're legal or not. And removing those illegals or the illegals from California, which is historically Mexico anyway, but removing those people from there would severely and detrimentally affect the societal and economic cohesion or what is there. It's not like you're going to, I don't know, Minnesota and saying, we're going to get rid of these illegals that are sort of leeching off the system. Most of them are not Latin and South Americans, by the way, in these other places. And it's California, it's sort of ground zero. And I think that they're doing it there for a reason, because it's going to be much more of a spectacle, much more of a reaction. And I think that Los Angeles, I don't know, in a way, it's more of a case by case basis. So in a way, like, I think that the protesters have a valid reason in California, maybe more so than they would in another location.
That reason, they also have a strong, you know, protest culture, riot culture, as you had mentioned, they have a history of it. And so it is a place that, you know, it feels like there's always that powder keg to have something big.
Yeah. I think we have a little bit of Trump's reaction. This is from today. This is from an hour or so ago, but this situation is developing rapidly. So take it with a grain of salt.
What I think it is. I mean, if we see danger to our country and to our citizens, we'll be very, very strong in terms of law and order. It's about law and order. We're going to be watching it very closely. And when they spit at people, You know, they spit. That's their new thing. They spit and worse. You know what they throw at them, right? And when that happens, I have a little statement. They say, they spit, we hit. And I told them, nobody's going to spit on our police officers. Nobody's going to spit on our military, which they do as a common thing. They get up to them this far away, and then they start spitting in their face. That happens, they get hit very hard.
Even if you're not planning to invoke that Insurrection Act, you still plan to send troops?
Well, we're going to have troops everywhere. We're not going to let this happen to our country. We're not going to let our country be torn apart like it was under Biden and his auto pen.
I think he's just like inventing some sort of like masochistic image in his head where it's just like people are coming up and just spitting in the cop's face from inches away. I have no idea what he's even talking about there.
I don't know. No, it's just his reaction, but they could be sending in the Marines. Elon just tweeted while we were live, and I'll tell our viewers. He said, whatever happens, we have got the space stations. We have got the spaceships, and they do not. So that's pretty interesting.
Nicki Minaj, Starships?
Starships. I don't like that song at all.
What is he talking about, bro? Like, what?
He's talking about that if like serious social strife and stuff like that. I mean, he's not real. I don't know that he's being like serious about like going to Mars on spaceships, but figuratively speaking, you guys got to deal with it. We don't. We're out, that sort of thing. And I think that that's the message that should be taken from it. I don't know. This stuff that's happening, apparently now people in the chat are saying that protests are spreading. They're in Minneapolis. I heard that there were some in New York City. Once again, I'm not going to sit here and say anything negative about the protesters because I don't talk shit on people's methods of protesting. I just don't. I don't need to agree with them, but
there's probably going to be protests up here. I mean, this is a progressive place.
Nothing in Seattle, though, Murat?
Not that I've heard of yet.
Yeah, we don't really have a huge anti-ICE movement. It'll probably be smaller if it does happen.
We, believe it or not, there is a good amount of Hispanics in Washington State. A lot of them live in this, like central Washington, but a lot of them are in agriculture. So the numbers are there. And so I think that would spill over into Seattle in terms of protests.
Well, Seattle always shows up for the Summer of Love. Summer of Love to Electric Boogaloo is what we're calling it. We're coming up with a theme song and some branding as well. We'll have t-shirts and stuff. If you guys want the California Republic flag on t-shirts, let us know. We'll make that happen. But we'll keep you guys updated, obviously. What other thoughts do you have on this week and what we're looking at?
Well, I think that this this protest situation will kind of keep burning through the next weekend. But I thought this Trump Elon thing was done, and so since Elon wanted to tease this out today, I'm expecting a few more funny tweets from through this week. We'll
see. Yeah, it doesn't look like there's a reconciliation. I also wanted to let you guys know that Elon did delete a lot of his tweets. Including the one about Epstein, pretty sure. Yeah. So those are gone. Obviously, we have the nice Alex Jones reaction. He was losing his mind. Well, we will keep you guys updated. We went a little bit over today. Thanks, guys. I hope you like the new time slot. Don't forget to check us out on ddgeopolitics.com. We'll be back again next week on Sunday, show on Wednesday. And we're working on another podcast, possibly on Fridays. We'll see what happens, guys, but I want to thank you all very much for joining us, and we hope that you enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and pay attention to the large count for updates on the Russia-Ukraine SMO. Tonight's strike should be quite large, as well as anything funny out of Elon or Trump and the California riots. Rot, anything else? Have a good one.